en todas aquellas zonas donde han intervenido: Irak, Siria, Afganistán. Ni hablar del conflicto israelí-palestino. Entonces están en ahora o nunca en el hemisferio occidental sur, su zona de mayor sostén, de volumen y al mismo tiempo de consistencia en cuanto a su hegemonía, el hemisferio occidental sur, América del Sur y toda la América posterior, Estados Unidos, al sur del Río Grande. Entonces, en ese proceso de lo que llamo una hegemonía fallida, están en una política de la hora o nunca respecto a Cuba, respecto a Venezuela y respecto a Nicaragua. Es decir, el ahora o nunca en el sentido de o dan el zarpazo para golpear los gobiernos y derrocarlos, Cuba, Venezuela y Nicaragua, o es muy tarde. Entonces, ese es el razonamiento que yo hago desde el punto de vista de lo que yo nombro o conceptualizo como una hegemonía que está fallando, una hegemonía en descenso, como es la de Estados Unidos. Entonces, se apuran y establecen el ahora o nunca. Son hitos históricos importantes. La comunidad cubana es fundamental en la zona sur y particularmente en Florida, un estado clave para las elecciones. Y Donald Trump, el presidente de los Estados Unidos, está preocupado de su reelección.
Estás escuchando en Informativo Pacífica, también puedes descargarlo en nuestros archivos en kpfk.org o en nuestro blog pueblossinfronteras.wordpress.com.
El Ministerio de Culturas de Bolivia y la Organización de Estados Iberoamericanos para la Educación, la Ciencia y la Cultura lanzaron una aplicación para teléfonos celulares que permite aprender 5 de las 36 lenguas originarias del país. Reporta Freddy Morales.
Se trata de la aplicación Lenguas de Bolivia, que puede descargarse gratuitamente del Play Store. Las 5 lenguas disponibles son aymara, guaraní, mojeño, trinitario, quechua y puquina, el idioma del pueblo Uru.
Imillaja parlas kiwa.
Y dice imillaja parlas kiwa. La niña está hablando. Tienes la traducción, tienes cómo se pronuncia y cómo se escribe al mismo tiempo. Entonces sí te facilita comunicarte con otra gente, por lo menos generar confianza con quien hable quechua, aymara, guaraní.
La aplicación fue desarrollada durante 2 años por el Ministerio de Culturas y la Organización de los Estados Iberoamericanos para la Educación, la Ciencia y la Cultura, OEI.
Según la UNESCO, una lengua originaria desaparece cada 2 semanas. De las aproximadamente 7.000 lenguas existentes en el mundo, 2.680 están en peligro de inminente extinción. Se estima que hasta finales del presente siglo desaparecerán el 90% de los idiomas, dado que al menos un 50% de estos 7.000 idiomas no cuentan con formas escritas.
La APP cuenta con 2 modalidades de aprendizaje, una individual con prácticas y la otra colaborativa mediante prácticas grupales.
Hay 9.6 millones de conexiones a Internet en Bolivia, de las cuales el 91%, es decir, aproximadamente 7.8 millones de personas, lo hacen a través de dispositivos móviles. Son un signo común de nuestros tiempos. Por ello consideramos que las lenguas indígenas deben montarse sobre esta ola.
La aplicación, que se irá enriqueciendo con la inclusión de otros idiomas a los 5 disponibles, está estructurada en lecciones de 4 minutos. Por iniciativa de Bolivia, Naciones Unidas declaró al 2019 como Año Internacional de las Lenguas Indígenas, con la finalidad de recuperar y fortalecer los idiomas de los pueblos originarios del mundo. Freddy Morales, Telesur, Bolivia.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
What's up, man? This is Eli. Sorry, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM, unlicensed, independent, non-commercial. That's how we like it.
You know, that's something needs to happen real soon. You got to save Free Radio. Yes, we need a new studio. We need it to be economical. It doesn't have to be a big place. It could be a small room. We'd like to have access to a bathroom. If the whole thing is clean and dry and has electricity, that's a real plus for us. Somewhere between the West Side and 41st Avenue, maybe part of your garage, or we could put a shack in your backyard. We'll consider pretty much any solution you can come up with. We're 20 years old. We're a community-supported pirate radio station. We've received official recognition 3 different times for our public service over the last 20 years, and we're offering a $300 reward to anyone who will get us a studio that we can use for at least a year. So send that email to frsc@freakradio.org. That's frsc@freakradio.org, or you could send mail to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061.
On the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. It's still without a studio and without a transmitter. As far as I know, actually, a transmitter. We just don't have our transmission up, but we're hoping to do that. So we're going to be coming on, and you get to hear us on the computer until such time as we get back on the air, which we'd love to do, hopefully with your help, all you listeners out there. Anyway, it's the Bathroom Spears Broadside Show coming at you of April 18th, 2019. Special focus on the Ross Camp, yes indeed. There's rumors of an attack on the Ross Camp coming our way from the oh-so-liberal shitty city council. I call them the shitty city council. Coming up next Tuesday, which I don't have the agenda yet, but when I get it on Sunday, or actually later tonight after we're all dead or something, I will pass it on your way and give you my comments on my longer show starting on Sunday morning at 9:30. There's also reports from Berkeley, as Berkeley liberals, kind of like our Santa Cruz City Council liberals, are moving to harass not just the RVs of an anti-RV law, but also the historic and long-lived, first they came to the homeless here there encampment, which has survived 16 or 17 police attacks, and thought they found a place on Adeline Street at the border of Oakland and Berkeley. But now they're being told they better put down their tents or they will be evicted. Although the word eviction, of course, isn't used. They're too genteel, the liberal Berkeley authorities, to do that. Anyway, stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with meat in it. Appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance. Or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line or I won't love you.
And welcome to another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside. This weekend and next week,
or at least the weekend, is packed with meetings. So, for instance, Friday, tomorrow, the 19th, apparently there's a plan for the city to go out and sort of deliver to the people out there, the campers at the Ross Camp, sort of an ultimatum about cleaning up and trying to kind of undercut the lawsuit that's being filed against the city by the Ross Camp campers, who are essentially saying, don't tell us to leave unless you've got a place for us to go. That's not in accord with not just human decency and basic constitutional rights, but also the Ninth Circuit Court's Boise versus Martin decision, because you got to have an indoor place for us to go to if you want to kick us out. I think some people actually prefer outdoor places, but they got to have some place, and they don't have no places. They screwed around the depot site. They killed all the transitional encampment proposals. They put off any real discussion of issues around laws criminalizing the homeless. And they came up with this crazy eliminating all possible sites except the depot site, which nobody wanted, or very few wanted. I mean, I guess there are some. Brent Adams spoke about his support for, and the support of some people for some safe parking spots, although I guess the depot, it's not a safe parking area. It was a gone-by-gone, lie on the concrete. I'm not sure if that concrete is, but it's lie in this lot, whatever the ground of it, the ground is, and then leave by dawn. I call them bigoted views against that. They came to the city council screaming about drugs, speaking about drugs, and denouncing homeless people in the most lurid and terms, nasty and inaccurate, and kind of like hate-mongering stuff, that scapegoating stuff. You can actually review that if you have a stomach for it on the city's website. Listen to the oral communications period, or listen to the homeless period, which was sort of shoved down the agenda. Most of the discussion taken up with the bogus promises of Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and Martine Bernal, and the timely intervention of City Attorney Tony Condotti on behalf of Mayor Watkins. Actually, it didn't happen a lot, but it happened at sufficient key points that the liberal or progressive majority, as really exemplified by Crone and Glover, never got out of the starting gate, really. How are the meetings coming up? Well, as I mentioned before, there's apparently, instead of talking to the plaintiffs in an appropriate way and saying they're acting on behalf of the city, which recognizes it's being sued because it's threatening to drive all bunches of people out onto the sidewalks from the area they're living in without giving them any options that they are required to do, fairly negotiating with them and acknowledging that they are in the midst of a lawsuit, the city is pretending it isn't really in the midst of a lawsuit at all, and this is sending a city employee, Megan Bunch, down there to chat with members of the camp, most of whom are not specifically the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, or standing their ground and refusing to allow their civil rights and their basic human dignity and their living situation to be trampled over by the city's latest bulldoze them away approach. It is to kind of, I think, to scare away the encampment under the
ได้แต่คิดในจิตตรึกตรองจะไปขอน้องแต่บ่มีเงินทัน
And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. And still, we're without a studio and without a transmitter. As far as I know, actually, the transmitter, we just don't have our transmission up. But we're hoping to do that. So we're going to be coming on, and you get to hear us on the computer until such time as we get back on the air, which we'd love to do, hopefully with your help, all you listeners out there. Anyway,
today it's the Bathroom Spears Broadside Show coming at you of April 18th, 2019. Special focus on the Ross Camp, yes indeed. There's rumors of an attack on the Ross Camp coming our way from the oh-so-liberal shitty city council. I call them the shitty city council. Coming up next Tuesday, which I don't have the agenda yet, but when I get it on Sunday, or actually later tonight after we're all in bed or something, I will pass it on your way and give you my comments on my longer show starting on Sunday morning at 9:30. There's also reports from Berkeley as Berkeley liberals, kind of like our Santa Cruz City Council liberals, are moving to harass not just the RVs with an anti-RV law, but also the historic and long-lived first they came to the homeless here there encampment, which has survived 16 or 17 police attacks and thought they found a place on Adeline Street at the border of Oakland and Berkeley, but now they're being told they better put down their tents or they will be evicted. Although the word eviction, of course, isn't used, they're too genteel, the liberal Berkeley authorities, to do that. Anyway, stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And welcome to another edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. This weekend and next week, or at least the weekend, is packed with meetings. So, for instance, Friday, tomorrow, the 19th, apparently there's a plan for the city to go out and sort of deliver to the people out there, the campers at the Ross Camp, sort of an ultimatum about cleaning up and trying to kind of undercut the lawsuit that's being filed against the city by the Ross Camp campers, who are essentially saying, don't tell us to leave unless you've got a place for us to go. That's not in accord with not just human decency and basic constitutional rights, but also the Ninth Circuit Court's Boise versus Martin decision, which says you got to have an indoor place for us to go to if you want to kick us out. I think some people actually would prefer outdoor places, but they got to have some place, and they don't have no places. They screwed around with the depot site. They killed all the transitional encampment proposals. They put off any real discussion of issues around laws criminalizing the homeless. And they came up with this crazy eliminating all possible sites except the depot site, which nobody wanted, or very few wanted. I mean, I guess there are some. Brent Adams spoke about his support for, and the support of some people, for some safe parking spots, although I guess a depot is not a safe parking area. It was a gone-by-dawn, lie-on-the concrete. I'm not sure how concrete it is, but it's lie in this lot, whatever the ground of it, the ground is, and then leave by dawn. So I call them bigoted views against that, that came to city council screaming about drugs, well, speaking about drugs, and denouncing homeless people in the most lurid and nasty terms, nasty and inaccurate, and kind of like hate-mongering stuff that scapegoating stuff. You can actually review that if you have the stomach for it on the city's website and listen to the oral communications period or listen to the homeless period, which was sort of shoved on the agenda, most of the discussion taken up with the bogus promises of Susie O'Hara, Tina Scholl, and Martine Bernal, and the timely intervention of City Attorney Tony Condotti on behalf of Mayor Watkins. Actually, it didn't happen a lot, but it happened at sufficient key points that the liberal or progressive majority, as really exemplified by Crone and Glover, never got out of the starting gate, really. Where are the meetings coming up? Well, as I mentioned before, there's apparently, instead of talking to the plaintiffs in an appropriate way and saying they're acting on behalf of the city, which recognizes it's being sued because it's threatening to drive all bunches of people out onto the sidewalks from the area they're living in without giving them any options that they are required to do, fairly negotiating with them and acknowledging that they are in the midst of a lawsuit, the city is pretending it isn't really in the midst of a lawsuit at all, and is sending a city employee, Megan Bunch, down there to chat with members of the camp, most of whom are not specifically the plaintiffs in the lawsuit or standing their ground and refusing to allow their civil rights and their basic human dignity and their living situation to be trampled over by the city's latest bulldoze them away approach, is to kind of, I think, to scare away the encampment under the pretext of cleaning it up. Now, there's some who disagree. For example, Brent Adams has spoken about this issue before. I don't know if he did this on the air or did this to me off the air, because we haven't really had a lot of conversations on the air. We had one longer one, I think, last show. But it's his perspective that he was afraid last year, actually almost a year and a half ago, when the San Lorenzo campground was being used under the kind of auspices of Mayor, I guess it was Mayor Matthews at the time, actually, but really it was Andy Mills, the police chief who made the decision, as well as Mauro Garcia, then the head of Parks and Rec. That department has since been taken over by Tony Elliott, who essentially said, no, we're not going to give you tickets for being in a park after dark. We're not going to give you tickets for sleeping. You can go here and sleep. And that was partially to drive people away from the post office encampment, which was starting up, and away from the City Hall Freedom Sleepers, Survival Sleepers area that had been going for 2 years, and also to acknowledge that even though there wasn't a Boise versus Martin decision yet, there was a precursor to it, Bell versus Boise, also part of the same, I think the same encamped group of people over in Boise who were suing for their rights, and then won the right to a trial, and essentially won a decision in the courts that the Boise authorities cannot just claim, oh, we have a shelter bed here and a shelter bed there, as long as you meet the right requirements to get in, and that's enough for us to say we can make it a crime for you to sleep elsewhere or anywhere else, period. They can't do that, and that decision now covers 9 states, unless and until such time as the Supreme Court overrules it, or there's some other clarifications made. I mean, the city of Boise tried to take that to a higher 11-person panel, an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit, and it was turned down. And so right now that's the precedent in California, Colorado, Wyoming, Washington, maybe even Hawaii. I think Hawaii is part of that too. 9 states in the West. In any case, Brent's idea was that he thought the people were going to be rousted from the San Lorenzo encampment a year and a half ago and not allowed to return, or allowed to return under worse circumstances. And in fact, he said it worked out very well. They did clean it up. They put in white lines. They initially restricted readmission to the campground, but eventually more people showed up and there was less restrictions, and it became Brent described it as a free-for-all, largely a drug camp as he saw it. He has a much different view of the Ross camp and of the San Lorenzo camp than some other folks who are supporters of both those activities. I'm one of the supporters. And Brent, has to be said, isn't an opponent of transitional encampments. He's a big supporter of transitional encampments. He isn't even an opponent of wet camps, per se. But he is an opponent of the Ross camp at this time. He wants to see it taken down and replaced by something better. I think that's a fair way of describing it. I'm going to try to get him on the phone, and there's the phone now, so maybe I'll get him, and we'll see. Actually, the incoming call is from none other than that Food Not Bombs bad boy, the world headquarters man, Katzenjammer Keith McHenry. Hello, Keith.
Hi, how's it going out there in the real world?
Well, you're the man who's running around getting all the food ready and, picking up all those dirty needles that are strewn all over the Food Not Bombs meals. Have you found any dirty needles recently?
Out of all the years I've been doing this, I've found one.
Wow. Now, is this because you're blind as a bat, or is it because they just needles don't like you, or...
I never find any needles around where I'm at. That just doesn't seem to... Wherever I go, I don't find them. I find sometimes the orange caps for needles, but I never found this one needle so far.
You've signed on as a plaintiff to the Ross Camp lawsuit to stop the city from mowing it down, and I guess... You have some plans to, tomorrow their plans. We'll be talking to Alicia Cool about this, too, who's a liaison for the Ross Camp Council, to, should we say, kind of hold the city accountable when a woman named Megan Bunch shows up, who's, the homelessness something of the city, who the city attorney is sending out. Instead of as a real bona fide legal representative of the city and real negotiations with the camp and with the plaintiffs, it's just a sort of an attempt to do an end run around that. Or am I being a paranoid?
It sounds exactly right. So this is one of our spies happened to talk to the Department of Public Works person who had been removed was there when they removed all the fences around the bench lands. And he was explaining that they were going to tell the people at Ross Camp to move to the bench lands after the Earth Day, and therefore then they would clean up Ross Camp, and then they didn't really know exactly what would happen. So that's one thing that I've heard. So we don't really know. And they're supposed to, and that person actually said, the Public Works Department person said that they were going to put up eviction notices to that effect tomorrow, I guess.
Now when is Earth Day, Keith?
And that would be on Saturday.
That's day after, tomorrow.
And I don't know whether they're supposed to move everybody on Sunday or what exactly is supposed to happen. So that's one possible situation. And then the other one is there's still more people coming forward with the idea, news that Ryan Coonerty met with the 2x2 and that he...
2x2 being...
Two city councilors, two city supervisors, or county supervisors, and that they were supposed to be withholding money for the River Street camp in exchange for getting rid of the Ross camp. But once the Ross camp was gone, then they would start to fund the River Street camp.
Now, when I looked at the Board of Supervisors item on item 20, which was the appropriation for the River Street Boneyard barbed wire campground that cost so much money last year and is now going to be used for just a few months as a supposed overflow area or substitute area for Ross Camp, but actually is wholly insufficient, and as well as the Association of Faith Communities program, a big amount of money is going to them for continuing their winter shelter. We will search you as you come in and whatever else we do and at that program. There was no indication that there was any requirement that the Ross Camp closed. Do you have anything more solid around that?
We're trying to get the notes from that meeting. all we're hearing is this verbally from people that were at the meeting, that that was what was said.
Really?
And don't have notes from that.
And you actually have some person specifically saying, I was at the meeting, I heard them say and vote on something to the effect of there will be no money unless the Ross camp closes.
I don't know if they voted on anything, but that was certainly, according to eyewitness reports, that's what they were talking about.
Huh.
I'm still working to get the notes. There's like there's supposed to be these notes of the meeting, we think. We don't know for sure if that was true, and we don't know if they will ever, they might be published months from now. But we're still pressuring the people at the meeting to give us see if there's actual minutes of the meeting, which might say something about that.
Well, I did look at, as I said, what I did see was the actual resolution, and it mentioned that it passed, and it mentioned what it was, but there was no mention of anything of a Ross camp closure that I saw. It's online. You can go online and find it on the Board of Supervisors website. Let me move.
Yeah, well, I don't know anything about that. Yeah, I know that the way they voted on it didn't mention it, so I don't really know what that means.
Now, you're also concerned about some crackdowns and Food Now bombs, because you are, in fact, not just the co-founder, but also a person who's actually working to feed people with the Food Now Bombs group here in Santa Cruz, and maintaining a coordination with groups throughout the world, at least to keep tabs on what they're doing. What's happening elsewhere that we should be aware of and be concerned about?
Let's see. There's been a bunch of private security and cops trying to get rid of the group in Honolulu from the park, but they seem to be pressing on, and they have not showed back up. That's the most recent thing I've seen of that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, and then there's groups serving food all over the world and doing things like that. So, but I don't know any more. That I think is the
something about Tampa, Florida. Maybe I think I saw something recently about Florida.
In Tampa, they removed all the benches from around where in the Gaslight Park where Food Now Bomb serves. Mm. So they removed all the benches there. There's a Food Now Bomb is involved in Initiative 300 to pass a resolution in Denver to force the city to abide by the Martin v. Boise. So there's that. There's a lot of new groups starting up. It's pretty exciting.
Is Denver actually refusing to abide? The Denver police, are they still arresting people for camping?
Yeah, they keep taking. In fact, I think even yesterday they wiped out a bunch of camps and took everybody's belongings. They did give receipts to people, but it's questionable as to whether people get it back.
Now, what about in Santa Cruz? You have a table that you put out every Saturday and Sunday from 4 to 6 at the post office downtown. So while you're serving food, you also are offering people literature, and you sometimes take reports of what's happened. Have you gotten any reports of people being ticketed either for sleeping, camping, being in a closed area, blocking the sidewalk, public nuisance, that sort of thing?
The most recent one was a woman. I overheard her speaking to a friend about how she was kicked in the head by some people while she was sitting on the by a person while she was sitting on the sidewalk, and they were screaming at her, "Get the hell out of here, you homeless person!" That kind of thing. So I hear that, and people being essentially verbally abused,
but not necessarily by Andy Mills uniformed police.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I need to get started on the weekly Food Now Bombs reading. And
well, let's just leave it there then, and maybe we'll talk to you tomorrow as you, I guess it's sometime in the afternoon, you will be mobilizing the troops over there to properly educate Megan, the
exactly.
City. Yes, the Miss City Councilwoman. All right, well, thank you, man.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, McHenry of Food Now Bombs. I was mentioning meetings that are happening. After this discussion with, again, if it happens, and it's not entirely clear what's going on there, there's going to be a 5:30 nonviolence training out at the Ross camp, as well as a 5:30 meeting at City Hall with Drew Glover and his interns on apparently proposing what is to be done at the next council meeting or maybe the council meeting after. I've had a difference of opinion with Councilmember Glover on how to deal with the kind of agenda sabotaging that Mayor Watkins seems to be into or has been doing with some regularity in concert with Martine Bernal, the city manager, and unfortunately Justin Cummings, the vice mayor. Although I haven't had a lot of specific discussions with Cummings about any of this. In fact, I haven't. The only kind of conversations I've had with Cummings were, I think, one exchange when he was running for city council, and then an occasional few remarks back and forth at city council during the break. He seems friendly enough when I've talked to him on those occasions, but he never returns calls to me and doesn't return my emails. I think he did return one email at one point. And he did at some point agree, you may remember, that the Ross Camp should not close until there's adequate indoor shelter. And that was the reason the Ross Camp was kept open. He was the fourth vote. But the danger now is because he's so closely allied with this 2x2 committee. He's one of the people who meets with them, I think, the city and the county politicians who decide what's going to go down with the Ross Camp and what the funding situation is. You heard Keith talk about it a little bit. He may have, you know, changed his loyalties. It's hard to tell. I'm very impressed with his endorsing this civility measure because civility seems to me to be code word for the kind of attacks on Drew Glover that have been done by Cynthia Matthews. Well, actually by Watkins. Matthews is wise enough to kind of sit back and allow other people to what seems to me to be carry out her agenda, which is repeatedly and traditionally anti-homeless, although masquerading as very pro-social services. You know, she's a big fan of Planned Parenthood, but not a union at Planned Parenthood, of course, if you were to go back a few years and look at that crushing of the union organizing there, as I understand it. Check out the nonviolence training of folks at the Ross Camp at 5:30 tomorrow on Friday. That's on the 19th, or you can go to the same time. You could maybe you can wander back and forth. If you've got a bicycle, maybe you can run back and forth with a or drive back and forth. Who knows? To the City Hall, where Drew Glover is meeting with interns. I've been very hopeful after Glover called in folks from different homeless groups to sit down and work out a series of proposals. And indeed, he and his interns worked with us way back in January, but those proposals got deep six. They didn't get put on the agenda. And when they were put on the agenda, they were sidelined. And then a majority seemed to be dissipated when Cummings seemed to leave it. And again, this recent incident that I mentioned before about civility. Civility is a fine thing in some respects, unless it masks injustice and the use of smiley, nice guy force to maintain a power imbalance between the wealthy and the poor, between the housed and the homeless, or some of the more privileged and prejudiced housed people and the homeless population and the poor population generally. On Saturday, there's a meeting at the SEIU, that's the Service Employees International Union, 521, that is going to be concerned with, that's from 12 to 2, with the issue of movement for housing justice, coalition building, and I guess coalition building in terms of homeless groups, renters, even folks, elderly people, disabled people, I'm guessing here, housing justice. I got an email on this from Cynthia Berger, activist who's been fighting on this issue for 3 or 4 years now at least. So that's going to be at the SEIU Hall on Saturday. And the SEIU Hall, I believe, is on Mission Street, a couple of blocks beyond Highway 1 as you head out of town. It's a big building on the corner there. I don't have the exact address, but I can find it. It is at 517B Mission Street. And that's, as I said, a couple streets down from where Highway 1 meets Mission. And that'll be happening at noon tomorrow. Today, there is an event being thrown by Councilmember Glover out at the Ross Camp from 12 to 3, I believe it is. Could be from 1 to 4. I'm a little bit unclear on that. And it's Easter Day activity with music and frolics and community gathering and come and meet the monsters of the Ross Camp, you know, and see how bad they are and, you know, lock up your children, that sort of thing. Or in other words, it's actually to do just the opposite, to make them, again, recognize that they're a part of the community, too. Today at 3 o'clock, there is a meeting with Glover and the Ross Camp Council out at Ross Camp. That's happening every Monday. I'm probably going to be playing some of the Ross Camp meeting from this last Monday, which was, I guess, the 15th. Presumably, he'll have an update on what the heck is going on with the City Council's agenda, which, if they're intending to dump the Ross Camp, you've heard Keith suggest this may be happening as early as this weekend, based on his discussions with a public works member, which is ominous indeed. It would seem to be in violation of the City Council proposal, a requirement that there be adequate notice for this so-called cleanup at the Ross Camp. And that there's also the lawsuit has said you can't clean up or clean out anybody until you have indoor shelter for them, or at least real shelter. But it looks like they're going to try to use, well, who knows what it looks like. But Keith suggests, at least one source suggests, it might be a San Lorenzo Camp deal. That's quite a ways away, involves a lot of moving of stuff. It looks like it's, well, we'll see what happens. And again, Glover will be there on Monday at 3 o'clock at the Ross Camp area, assuming that it's not all covered with cleaning trucks or whatever they do, bulldozers. And it's hard to tell. He has been showing up there every week at 3. And then, of course, Tuesday there is the City Council meeting, which I don't have the agenda for, so I can't tell you if it starts at 12, 1, 2, or 3. It started at many different times, and the actual agenda items concerning this issue might not happen until the evening. So, it's hard to say.
Money. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound, a mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound is all that makes the world go around, that clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round. Money, 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 money. If you happen to be rich, should you feel like a knife? Entertainment you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring
ting-a-ling
for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover and you moan and you can't fight a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab and begin to recover on your 14 carat yacht.
What?
Money makes the world go round, the world go round, the world go round. Money makes the go round, the black people's ashore on being poor. Money, 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 money.
In the winter and you curse to the wind at your face. When you haven't any shoes on your feet, your coat's thin as paper and you look 30 pounds underweight. When you go to get a word of advice from the fat little pastor, he will tell you to love him evermore. But when hunger comes to rap, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, at the window. At the window.
Who's there?
Hunger.
Oh, hunger.
See how love flies out the door. Money makes a bird go around the bird, go around the bird. Money makes a bird go around.
That, of course, was the movie version of Cabaret's song Money from the musical from 1972. Cabaret. Reach Alicia Cool now, who's last I heard out at the Ross campground trying to prepare for what may be a rough weekend for the Ross campers. We'll see how that goes, see if I can catch her on the phone. Well, I have on the line with me now activist Alicia Cool, who's out at the Ross camp huddling in her van after having trekked up and down announcing this meeting with Megan Bunch of the homelessness hoop-de-doo group at the city council. She's coming tomorrow at 2?
Yep, she's coming tomorrow at 2 to discuss the details that I guess are ever-evolving regarding the cleanup that's supposed to take place here.
And this cleanup is something that I guess you have requested through City Attorney Condotti be resolved in a more formal way with the plaintiffs, but Condotti, the city attorney, has not responded. Is that accurate?
That is, well, he's responded saying something like, that's the city council's job, setting the plans for that, and he kind of, like, passed the buck a little bit. There's some issues with it, obviously, issues that I mentioned before. I was told by Megan Bunch and Susie O'Hara in the past that any camp cleanup would involve the people staying right where they are and being able to work with maybe Parks and Rec and the fire chief. And the fire chief was involved in these conversations as well. So in the past, any conversation that we've had involved everybody staying where they are and working with them. And so, you know, it seems like they're going against that, making up an alternative plan, and I'm supposed to hear some details. We're all supposed to meet with the Ross Camp Council and as many people as we can get in this meeting tomorrow to discuss, I guess, what alternate plan they've come up with.
And what time will that be?
2 o'clock. And there's also a, after that, there's a 5:30 meeting, and it is a, it's a nonviolent resistance training, and it's being put on by YAR.
What is YAR?
YAR is Your Allied Rapid Response.
And what is that?
They have a number, and it's like they put out an APB for if ICE is in the area, everybody can come and document.
That's Immigration Control and Enforcement?
Yes.
Uh-huh, my favorite. So...
And they've graciously reached out to help, you know, in these matters with the homeless.
So I know there's been some concern about there being a possible complete reversal of this don't leave Ross Camp alone, or at least cooperate in some way with a cleanup coming up at City Council on Tuesday because of some rumors of action at the Board of Supervisors. I talked to Keith McHenry about it before I called you. He thinks that that's a likely possibility, but he doesn't have any really solid information. Do you have any information on this?
I've heard from multiple sources that that there was a contingency as far as the funding for 1220 River, that there was a contingency that was verbally said that the funding will not be given to 1220 River until the Ross Camp is closed, or at least until there's a date set for closure. I don't know the exact wording, but it was something like that, and I've heard that from multiple sources, although we can't track down any evidence, like in writing or anything. It was a closed session, to my understanding, so we can't, other than, you know, hearsay and verbal confirmations, get any actual evidence.
Hmm. Now, I also understand that one of the chief concerns that you and others who are concerned with the Ross camps, the civil rights of the people there, and just the survival needs of the people there, looking at how other communities and other cities have been forced out of campgrounds, but who have stayed together as a community and eventually established their own campgrounds, such as in Portland, Oregon, and some other cities. Do you have that as an objective, or does the Ross Camp Council have that as an objective? And how's that? If so, how's that going?
To be modeled after, like, the ones in Portland, Oregon? I mean, is that your question?
My question is the objective to hold the Ross Camp ground primarily, or is it to hold the Ross Camp community together, or...
Yes, definitely. Until we get another option, we have no choice. This camp is necessary for survival.
Mm-hmm. So there are those, of course, who say you've got rodents, you've got needles, you've got toxic this and that, you've got MRSA. All this has to be dealt with by essentially removing all the camps, all the tents, whether it's one section at a time or all at once. And that would necessitate at least moving a large portion of the folks somewhere else for a period of time. What's your reaction to that claim?
Those claims are highly exaggerated. The fire chief admitted that they've caught very few rats. We did a camp cleanup it was just a few days ago, actually. We cleared up a whole bunch of, you know, things that would maybe be of concern. We made sure there's no garbage on the ground. We've done a tremendous effort as a group there, and with the community to address a lot of those potential concerns anyways. They weren't really serious, as far as I observed anyways, but we did clean up. And so I think, like I said, those are really exaggerated, and I think any cleanup effort can be done with people where they are. There's no reason to move everybody out. That's ridiculous.
Well, you know that often, and we've talked about this before, when the police come and threaten people with citations, and they threaten them with property seizure, and they threaten them with we'll strike you off the good girl and good boy list, whatever, that can have an impact on people, even if what the police are doing and what the rangers are doing isn't strictly legal. What do you anticipate the response
will be? Well, that could have an impact. I've let everybody know that there is a risk that you could be, you know, we don't know how this is going to go if you hold your ground. And so it could go, obviously, a multitude of ways, but... From what I understand and the word that I just got from, you know, going up and down the camp three or four times and talking to large groups of people, is that they don't really care about that. They've been cited so much in the past, it's not really a big thing. They don't mind holding their ground. They feel really strong in this cause. They don't have another place to go, so it's obviously, you know, a matter of necessity as well. So I've been told by the people here that they're willing to stand their ground, and if that means citation, I mean, we'll see what happens. But
and if it means arrest,
well, like I said, we will see what happens.
Okay.
But we've got over 200 people here, and they don't have another place to go. So when you don't have another place to go and you don't have an alternative, you tend to really fight hard for what you do have. So I feel like that's where they're at, and that's what they're telling me. So.
I've heard something about some sort of an Easter egg hunt on Sunday. What is that about?
Council member Drew Glover is hosting an Easter event from 1 to 4 on Easter Sunday here at the camp. And it's going to be, I think the schedule is like 1 o'clock, and I could be wrong because I don't have it in front of me. It's like egg dyeing. 1:30 is like music, some food at 2 o'clock, some conversation. It's supposed to be, you know, happy, fun event.
Mm-hmm.
Take some of the edge off, you know, and have a little celebration.
I like the idea. And I guess on Monday you have a regular meeting with Drew Glover at 3 o'clock, which with the Ross Camp Council and anyone who wants to attend?
Yes, we do.
Is there anything that happens on Saturday usually or on Sunday in terms of charitable groups that come out to the camp?
Every Sunday at 10 a.m. I know the DSA comes out and brings a lot of supplies and necessity of life things. And I know that multiple people come on Saturday. I'm not sure the exact name of the group. There was somebody out here just a little while ago that was giving soup and some bread and things like that. So, I mean, that's another reason why I'm fighting for this camp, is that there is a lot of donations and things like that being driven to this camp right now. So it's a good community space where we've already established so much. And so for us to lose all of that and displace everybody without giving them another place to go just doesn't even make any sense.
I actually have been reading a long Facebook dialogue between activist Brent Adams and an activist who supports the continued presence of Ross Camp with, you know, the campers there as they are. You may have seen it yourself. I think you contributed somewhat to it. It's a rather interesting dialogue because often Brent can get very angry and even vituperative at times. And he doesn't in this situation. He's very passionate about it. But his opponent does seem to be... he has a sort of a it's a long dialogue. I'm trying to remember, and I'm looking for his name here. It's you probably know it, and I'll find it in a moment if I can. Rats. I know that you've had conversations with Brent Adams recently, right?
I did.
How did that go?
I don't know. That's a strange question. I mean, it was sort of civil, and that was it. It was short.
I guess his dialogue is with a guy called Reggie Meisler. Have you heard of him?
Oh, yeah. Reggie, I believe, is with the DSA.
And, I mean, I'm going to read some of that later because it's an interesting dialogue. They both are presenting some interesting points. And they talk about the general history. Reggie's perspective seems to be that a lot of the progressive forces in Santa Cruz, unlike in the past, are actually, well, occasionally it's happened, but not to the extent that it may be happening now. It's hard to say. I'm a little pessimistic. Behind homeless civil rights. They're kind of lining up behind homeless folks, maybe because there's a lawsuit going, maybe because it's becoming obvious people are over the place and there's nothing else to do, maybe because it's becoming fashionable and there's money available for some kinds of emergency shelter. Any comments about... You often have an online struggle with numerous really nasty critics, and sometimes Brent can be harsh, but he's not quite as harsh as some of the discus people and some of what we would call the folks that some associate with Take Back Santa Cruz. Have you learned anything through that conversation that you didn't know? Have you come to any new understanding about the community? How's that affected you?
You mean kind of like the backlash towards trying to make positive change around here?
Right. That's what I mean.
Or the conversation that like Brent had with Reggie?
Both.
I haven't fully followed the conversation that Brent had with Reggie, so be uneducated of me to comment too much on that because I'm not sure what all was said in that. But I've noticed that through my observations, there's a hub of haters here, I guess, that you could call it, that are just anti anything positive. They seem to hate the homeless. They think, you know, I hear all the typical hate mongering and misconceptions coming from this centralized group. And I could name some of them if you want. I mean, they were attacking me online. Melissa Freeburn, Marsha Quinn Noren, Paige Concannon. There's another guy who sent me a friend request, actually. I guess he thought I wouldn't notice that it was him. But I can't remember his name offhand. But it's just, you know, a central group of haters that like to spread misinformation. And I'm just letting it roll off my back. I'm not really worried about it. Mm-hmm. I figure if you're not part of the positive movement and the solutions that we're trying to make, then, you know, you're kind of insignificant in the process, really. Mm. I mean, you are part of the problem. But if you're not going to be helping, I'm just going to try to ignore, you know, your negativity right now and keep on keeping on.
Take it. Well, I'm gonna leave it there, but do you have anything you want to put out there or announce or ask people to bring either to the meeting with Megan Bunch tomorrow or the charities that show up on Saturday or the nonviolence training that's happening on Saturday as well at 5:30. I guess it's tomorrow at 5:30, right?
Well, keep everybody posted about everything. You can keep up to date kind of with what's going on the Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates page. And I just want to invite everybody to come out to Easter from 1 to 4, the Easter celebration. You know, bring stuff, bring yourself, bring your family. Okay. And that's about it.
Well, I'll let you go then, and have fun for the rest of the day if you can.
All righty, I'll be busy. But thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Now, that was a little depressing, so I will sing you a cheerful, uplifting, rousing song, which is guaranteed to cheer you up. When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do, but don't you worry. No more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore again be seen. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to mourn, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a tedium when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are. We will all burn together when we burn. There'll be no need to stand and wait your turn. When it's time for the fallout and St. Peter calls us all out, we'll just drop our agendas and adjourn. You will all go directly to your respective Valhallas. Go directly, do not pass, go, do not collect $200. And we will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo, when the air becomes uranious, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we all will go together when we all go together. Yes, we all will go together when we
go. That was Tom Lehrer, "We Will All Go Together When We Go." From goodness knows 50 or 60 years ago, but still relevant, particularly with the nuclear modernization programs put in place by Obama and Trump. Yes, Obama and Trump. And not really opposed, really clearly, by the great liberals, progressives, and Green New Deal folks that I've seen yet coming out clearly against militarization programs. There's a bit of it, but not a lot, particularly around with Bernie Sanders. But Anyway, let's get back to the Ross camp, my favorite topic. Wrote on Facebook on April 12th, rather than holding a clear vision and working to transform our relationship to an experience of homelessness, lefty community has been reduced to crusading for the lowest common denominator. Advocates and activists with no forward motion have championed a straw dog while the community at large was fed red herring. After months of work, it's time for me to sidestep to stage left until the shit show is over. I'll lay low, do good work, and slowly stir a new pot of magic. Gets positive remarks. Totally agree. You do your work until we will surface again. Donna Dice writes, good works. I think your instincts that are good, I'll continue to support you and what you are doing. Coral Brune, yeah, being brave is good, and you are. And then we have Melissa Freebarn coming in, who's a strong right-wing opponent of Ross Camp. All these other people are not really. I don't think Donna Dice and Coral Reef are. The fight has just begun, Brent. You've just been on the wrong team. If you want to solve this problem, it's bigger than a tent. The homeless need you more than ever. Let's make a new team. And so forth. Asks, Brent, you mentioned the lowest common denominator they're fighting for. What would you say what that is, please? And Brent writes, the right to remain in Ross Camp. And she agrees, that's a dead end. Reggie Meisler comes in. He was the person I mentioned to when I spoke with Alicia a few minutes ago. I don't think I've met him, and if I have, I don't know exactly who he is. He writes, Brent, you got to let people have their struggle how they want to have it. A transitional encampment is great, but there just wasn't enough energy behind it. At the end of the day, the city staff may claim they dislike Ross because of drugs or other reasons that seem like transitional encampments are the clear upgrade, but the staff is full of shit. They don't actually care about the differences between Ross and traditional encampments or transitional encampments. They just hate all camps. Ross has resulted in an accidental transformation, and we need to respect what the campers like about it. If there was a big push for transitional encampments and the city authentically wanted it, we could have worked with that, but there wasn't enough energy and the city didn't actually want it. We need to follow the leader right now. Alicia is the leader. That's all there is to it. All the energy is behind her, and our only power is in energy, not in ideas. To which Brent replies, I think you and many others have missed several boats of opportunity here. I hope you'll read this response and hear it clearly. Firstly, after years of visiting transitional camps and noting the elements of a dozen successful camps and how they were able to be formed in cities with populations not unlike ours, I spent several months hosting community meetings in my office and at Loudoun Nelson. Once Drew got in office, things moved way too fast. To build necessary support, I hosted many one-on-one kitchen table meetings with Reggie, Fazell, Michelle, Sandy, Justin, Crone, Drew, Brahinsky, Julian, Stacy, and many more. Having hired Danny, I expected we'd see coalescing support for a multi-tiered plan that Drew finally brought to council. Nope. People weren't interested in taking a stand. Drew brought it within the second council meeting and had his interns make it happen. It was too fast for the support it was working toward. Immediately, Alicia wrote, the camp Brent Adams is supporting, the homeless don't want it. Now, I'm going to pause here in the midst of Brent's thoughts or his writing, because Alicia was talking about the very seriously ordered fenced-off transitional camp that involves a lot of rules. It doesn't necessarily involve drug testing, but drug prohibition. And I think she was quite accurate in saying most people... There are some exceptions, of course, people who are trying to come off drugs specifically, people who are afraid of folks who are on drugs, people who share this general apprehension of drug users, I'm sure agree with him, but mostly the people that agree with Brent on this, I think, are folks who really have a dogmatic anti-drug ideology, and also folks who who kind of cater to that ideology, who are afraid of that ideology. It's the ideology that kept marijuana a criminal for nearly 100 years. And it's just, to me, it's always wrong to cater to that. I get pissed when Drew Glover does it, as he's doing with Mayor Watkins and refusing to challenge her directly and put items on the agenda, even if she doesn't want them on the agenda, by forcing that through with council votes. Or whether it's Brent, who's doing a lot of good programs, or a number of good programs, but is not, I certainly don't share his views on the necessity of transitional encampments as a sort of a dogmatic and my way or the highway approach. I'll read you a bit more of what he says. Stopping at this, Alicia said the homeless don't, the camp Brent Adams is supporting, the homeless don't want it. I think he is focusing too much on this one comment she made. I think that she and I and Brent all met. She's willing to work with Brent, and Brent says he's willing to work with her too. So let's hope that that can go somewhere. There's still serious differences of opinion, but the issue is the real enemy is, frankly, the city government, not any of the activists. So whether the activists are, you know, Brent's, even the activists who are on the other side with the Take Back Santa Cruz are not the major stumbling block. They wouldn't get anywhere if the city staff wasn't on their side to start with, if the city police wasn't on their team to begin with. And that's the way the city has been acting without without great assistance from Take Back Santa Cruz, the Downtown Association, the Santa Cruz neighbors, for decades. So let's point our fingers in the right direction here. But in any case, continuing with what he had to say. Alicia wrote, the camp Brent Adams is supporting, the homeless don't want it. This is Brent writing. This was a problem right out of the gate. To represent the camp or the homeless in general is a problem. Reggie, you may not agree, yet there is no other person more closely associated with those in this camp than me. Campers by the dozens use the storage program within view of the camp. Brent's day and night storage is right across the river and right across the pedestrian footbridge from the Ross camp. As director of the Warming Center over many years, I've been close to this population. I'm in the camp daily, and I've followed a dozen people from one camp to the next over many years. I think I have just as much right to speak for the homeless. I'd never propose to. I know who is in the council, the Ross Camp Council, and how they were chosen. I would never speak for them. Instead, we've created an authentic data set connecting the dots. That's the name of the group or the study he's done, connecting the dots, to do the speaking. Transitional encampments were building a great amount of support, even though Alicia and the activists were speaking against them to council and in public. And I don't think it's that people were speaking against the transitional encampments. They were. My concern was that this was always, frankly, the notion of cooperation with the city on this issue was a fantasy of Brent's. That is to say, he was incredibly optimistic and hopeful that he could build adequate community support to overcome the entrenched Martine Bernal mentality on the city council, or in the city staff. The city council comes in and out. The city staff is forever is the problem. So, continuing here. We had support, he writes, in many circles, and we're just about to host a large community symposium to build more support. With the city manager's support, I gave a presentation to council on March 12th. Then in one moment it was dashed in the city council meeting on March 19th when the city manager switched to safe sleeping in parking lot 24, that's the Depot Park, this with no community meeting. It was clear the fix was in as the city exposed that they had no authentic intention to do any of these managed camps. This is completely true. I think he has his finger on what happened. I was effectively hacked at the knees. Alicia and other activists protested the safe sleep zone as the homeless don't want it. I have a list of more than 20 people who've been waiting for such a thing. What activist protest programs that benefit people? Well, it depends, because the reason Alicia argued against the Depot Park safe sleep zone was it was the excuse to clear the Ross camp. It's not that it isn't necessarily something that people can't use, or that a small number of people shouldn't be able to go to and shouldn't exist, but this was their pretext. It was a ridiculous pretext. It doesn't at all uncover the number of people in the Ross camp, even with the 1220 River Street Boneyard campground that would last only until June. But in a way, Brent is a little misleading here, I think. Immediately, there was a new tea camp, a transitional camp plan produced by Alicia. Now, after a few weeks of saying people don't want them, they're now saying it's what people want. Again, I think he focuses too intensely on the fact that Alicia had problems with some of parts of Brent's model. It wasn't that she doesn't think the transitional camps don't have a place, and she she and Brett got in some pretty harsh arguments, most of which I got the impression came from Brent, who can get pretty sharp in what he says and pretty personal pretty quickly. But continuing with his argument, the council, most of them I know, do not represent, that's the Ross Camp Council, do not represent the greater Ross Camp. Go into the camp and ask them about the council, and you'll hear the same thing over and over. People haven't heard about it. And that's true, but it doesn't mean they disagree with what the council is doing, or that they necessarily agree with Brent that the Ross Camp should be demolished. Because that is what Brent has suggested should happen. He wants it to be demolished and a better camp set up in its place. But if the city has no intention of setting up a better camp, what it really amounts to is supporting the city's plan to demolish the Ross Camp. That's the problem, at least as some people see it. And I think, to some extent, as I see it. This camp plan, Brent continues, has yet to gain 100 online signatures. I think that's the Alicia's plan, perhaps. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what plan he's talking about. A few years ago, I did a similar transitional camp online support poll, which garnered more than 1,000 signatures. There is no real community support here. Then in whiplash fashion, this camp plan was traded for a meeting about a renegade camp in the Poganip, sponsored by Huff and Food Not Bombs, etc. And Brent here is talking about a meeting that we had at the Resource Center for Nonviolence several Wednesdays ago, which was essentially a Save the Ross Camp meeting, looking for alternatives in the event that the city moves on the camp to simply to try to move somewhere else, whether it's to a parking garage or to San Lorenzo Park or to Camp Paradise or to the Poganip or across the freeway, wherever. In other words, looking for a way to hold the community at Ross Camp together. And that seemed to be something that Brent didn't, if he did follow, he ignored it. Continuing. Now Anthony Prince has come to town and has fronted $400 and filed an injunction. Now we're getting someplace. The city council has voted that after the entire camp is removed and scrubbed, some amount of people will be allowed to recamp. This will be exactly what happened last year in San Lorenzo Benchlands. I talked about this earlier in this broadcast. Does anyone remember last year? Virtually no one in the current conversation has any knowledge that we simply repeated what happened last year. And I guess his suggestion is that even if they clean out the camp, they're going to let people come back as they did in San Lorenzo, and it'll be a better camp and a closer to the transitional model that Brent favors. And in the meantime, people can camp either nearby in the Poganip or San Lorenzo Park or somewhere else, and then they can return. I think is the impression I get is what he thinks the city will do based upon what they did a year and a half ago when they did cleanups in the San Lorenzo Benchlands. The court case, he writes, will be the thing, and I wholeheartedly support it. Good for him. Yet to what end? We still need imaginative and forward-thinking programs that are proven to be effective and efficient at healing people as they heal the community. We need advocacy for these. Transitional encampments, safe sleep zones, robust car parking program, laundry, hygiene, storage, traditional shelter. Because we're not going to see legitimate housing constructed, because the proposed shelter to be built will be too little too late. And I agree with him, and I would also say, and I think he might agree with me, in leaving people alone where they are if none of these things exist, which mostly for most people they don't. I research, develop, and build, he writes, and operate programs that show evidence in other cities to address utmost needs here. Our activist community has been similarly short-sighted over the past 20 years, and here we are again. I see you and many other people not understanding, he's talking again to Reggie, where we've been, where we're at, and unable to see a good thing and championing it. We'll see activists speaking for the homeless. We'll see groups and political parties helping in order to move their agenda forward. I don't protest other people's actions, yet I do speak clearly to the issue. I've donated to the legal fund. I've voted for the Alicia proposal. Yet you think I should let people have their struggle? This struggle is all I've been about for many years. So here we are with the very lowest common denominator, advocating for an unmanageable camp that will eventually be removed. Hooray! No vision, no improvement, nothing to work towards. I'm stoked to watch this legal thing play out. Yet I'm committed that in Santa Cruz and not one person should have to sleep outside, and we can produce and operate programs for pennies on the dollar for what they'll be doing on River Street for the second year in a row. That's the 1220 River Street camp for 60 tents, the barbed wire boneyard. My initial post on my own damn Facebook page stands, and he gives a link to it. And he then writes, Reggie, last year I tried to form a union of camp residents in the benchlands, but I receded due to integrity because the 10 people who were meeting were not representative of the whole camp. Those were simply the people who could come to the meetings. It was readily apparent that many more disagreed with what this union was saying for many reasons that I won't discuss here. G. Meisler replies, that is a good breakdown of some of what happened. I can understand that all this feels like Groundhog's Day to you with what's going on and what's happening before, but I feel like this is how you fight for change. You ask for more and more, and you agitate and agitate. Santa Cruz is not a hospitable place for homeless camps of any kind right now, and so, to the public, transitional encampment sounds basically no different than Ross Camp. The plan is too nuanced for the opposition people to understand, it seems, especially when their arguments tend to be, fuck all druggies. While this may reflect movements of the past, there's a clear difference here. One, we have a much stronger alliance right now than we've had in recent years, with incredibly strong progressive allies in the Democratic Socialist America, DSA, and the Santa Cruz for Bernie, refocusing some of their usually disparate efforts on homelessness. The alliance is broad and deep. I'm not persuaded this is necessarily true, but it would be nice if it was, and maybe it is. We also have a more progressive council than we've had in, well, I haven't been around long enough to know, maybe since Bruce's era. It's never been progressive toward the homeless, really. Two, we have a real chance right now to fight, not just from a compassionate neighborhood perspective, but from a basic human rights perspective, which is transformative thanks to the Martin versus Boise decision. Three, we have people who are actively homeless, actively from Ross Camp, leading these fights and showing up to city council. This is far more transformational in the battle of humanization. At the end of the day, even if we get a transitional encampment of 50 people, that camp will be slowly pulled apart by reactionaries if you don't invest in this deeper human rights struggle. Look at how staff tore apart your plan in a matter of days and left it disfigured and bastardized. We need a better groundwork here, and this legal fight in Ross Camp are ground zero, in my opinion. G. Meisner. At which point Brent Adams replies, Reggie, we have the votes. We've had the plan. We have a nonprofit with a strong track record of operating efficient, much-needed programs, and we have a supportive community. Let's be clear. I haven't been advocating for the nonprofit. I've been advocating for an encampment model that works to heal the circumstances of individuals as it heals the community at large. Protest activism that raises up a handful of people claiming they represent the whole while basically using them as a talking stick is inauthentic and can be harmful. It's what Robert Norris has been doing for decades. That's not a movement. What's truer is that we have a city full of people sleeping in doorways who need something immediately. The camp is not indicative of our homeless population. Let's not rally around concepts and camps that are unsustainable. Our political affinity and protest groups, etc., aren't designed to develop and operate long-running programs that work well with government. That's what the nonprofit sector is for. I haven't been advocating for myself or my nonprofit, but for an encampment model. Yet the nonprofit I operate has been a challenge to the status quo, because while operating on a shoestring, we never turn anyone away. We're always scalable, and we've challenged in many other ways. One, scalability, that means he will expand the number of people he takes in depends on who applies. In other words, if someone comes, he'll let them in, if that's possible, and they're not running around screaming and breaking things. Two, instituting cleaning protocols. Three, placing a highest priority on physical mobility challenges, letting in folks who are handicapped particularly. No property searches. Four, no property searches or background checks to participate, etc. The question I ask you and others is, here we are. Now what? To what end? We need to not only demand that the city provide many types of shelter, but to establish what that shelter is. We need now to state that every person who sleeps outside has access to clean and safe and dignified shelter. One, traditional shelter. Two, transitional camps. Three, safe sleeping zones like maybe wet camps. And four, safe parking. without holding a strong vision of such, will continue wasting whatever momentum you think we've gained. Our work and nonprofit has many hundreds of supporters and people across political lines who will stand up in support. You haven't seen anything yet. And that was Brent. Reggie Meisler replies, I think many of us are simply not convinced that Ross is unsustainable. I think what's unsustainable is the city's attitude toward homelessness at a time when land value inflation has outpaced the majority of people's wages and the majority of government subsidies. Ultimately, we need massive reform. I think transitional encampments do scale well. You can expand them. But I also think that the transitional element and strict rules, this is what Alicia was concerned about in Brent's model, misses the broader picture, which is that everyone deserves dignity and that private property is causing this epidemic. And we can't act like a simple springboard is some sort of solution to a housing market that is broken on a fundamental level. Even conservatives have begun to identify that the transitional part of transitional housing makes no sense. People have nowhere to transition to. We need to let people stay where they are. And Brent replies, please spend 30 minutes hanging out deep within Ross Camp without having a task. Stay and stay. Make authentic friends, as I have. I know most Ross residents by name. Most want something better, safer, and with opportunities towards sobriety. Employment, education, housing, etc., such that a camp will never provide. If we don't hold some value in these and only focus to the lowest common denominator, as you've described, then we do an entire population of those sleeping outside a disservice. Transitional encampments are only one thing, yet it's what I've seen that is the best from San Diego to Seattle. Reggie replies, there simply aren't those opportunities for everyone. They may get employment, but they won't get enough money to afford market rate rent, and there aren't enough affordable housing units for them. How are we expecting them to transition? Why not let them stay where they are and get services? And Brent Adams replies, because there are 90% more people sleeping outside in the larger community than are within the Ross camp. This camp conversation is bringing all possibilities down. Though with the injunction, we have an opportunity to aim high and demand that the city help us create novel and awesome new programs. If you're only advocating for Ross camp remaining, then that's a problem. Reggie replies, we have to be fair, though. According to the county survey, up to 40% of the total population has drug addiction and or mental illness, so it's not like 90% don't need these services. Brent Adams writes, Ross Camp is the last safe place for exploring sobriety. For some, it seems that harm reduction is more important than creating safe space. To advocate for a Ross camp over transitional encampments and other programs is ridiculous and says more about politics than it does about care for a very vulnerable population. I've watched many people who I know and love sink from stability into the depths of addiction, and in this camp they become drug-addicted wraiths. I expect more of this community of lefty activists, and if we're going to follow leaders who switch plans and tactics from week to week and pretend to speak for a camp who never heard of the person before a few weeks ago, then I don't have much respect for this, quote, movement. I'll get busy building something of substance because, despite reaching out to you and others for many months, this is the best we've got. Reggie replies, I don't think anyone likes the idea of kicking Ross people out to clean. No one from outside buys into that, and so this whole plan is just not as solidified or agreed upon as it would appear. Alicia is even planning a volunteer Monday cleanup to help avoid this issue. In other words, the idea that the city will use the cleanup as an attempt to clean people out. I think there is a draw in helping people who are easy to help. If you want to do that, go ahead and do that. But we aren't going to give up on this spiritual battle for human rights in order to implement a camp that abandons a large chunk of the most desperate people. And he's talking about Brent Adams' restrictive model. There's a battle over transitional encampments right now, but there's a war over human rights. We can't drop the war just to win a battle. And if you want critical mass buy-in on your transitional encampments, you need it to be not an existential threat to what other people are defending. People aren't interested in buying that right now. I think a transitional encampment in Poganip is totally reasonable and possible at this point. There's really no reason to suggest such a jarring plan as replacing Ross Camp with a transitional encampment. And, of course, Brent replies, Anyone who spent any real time in the camp understands that there are massive piles of material. There are terribly toxic piles in and around many of the tents. The cleanups, all four of them, last year were highly beneficial. I wish you and others could remember only a short time ago, but you weren't engaged then. I think he's talking about the cleanups at the San Lorenzo campground, but I could be wrong, which was actually mostly the year before last, in the fall of 2017, and maybe a bit in the spring of 2018. Will you be engaged, Brent asks, next year? Most of this is just marketing with little real substance, but you're in the war, and I'm doing what? This homeless human rights movement has been rolling along for many years. Things get worse every year. People ever blame the government without building real programs that help people? You may not recognize that not one person has to sleep outside ever again under 38 degrees or in large rainstorms. And this is based upon Brent's claim that his warming shelter has been open always on those nights and has never turned anyone away. But, of course, what this ignores is the fact that if the temperature gets a little lower than that, or the rain isn't as strong and persistent, nobody gets into shelters because they aren't open. They've only been open, I don't know, a dozen times in the last year, although they're probably twice as many times as in the year before, his warming shelter program. Not one person has to carry all their belongings around on their back anymore. And that, I think, is a true statement. He has this storage program that he's been operating now for almost a whole year. These are stands I personally took based on knowing what the real experience of those who sleep outside is like. Soon there will be free laundry, and we could have several safe, clean, and dignifying places for people to sleep and be in community because many of us are working on it. I literally know many hundreds of Santa Cruz people experiencing homelessness by name, and I know their struggles, successes, and what has hampered their healing. Most of the people in Ross Camp I've spoken to over many months want something better than this camp. When you speak of what our side wants, and when you tell me of the war that I'm not fighting, I take that as ridiculous, and I suspect you are not operating from a true source of data. You're likely looking through a privileged, housey, leftist, anti-authoritarian viewpoint and seem much like many dozens before you who stood up on this issue and then soon disappeared to make it difficult for us who've been fighting the real war for people's lives and dignity. Reggie Meisler replies, you are, of course, fighting, and your work is invaluable. Just don't get between all these activists and the Ross Camp fight. Why not try to set up a transitional encampment in Watsonville? It seems like Warming Center has presence over there. Brent Adams writes, because I'm here. The people I've grown to know and have been serving over years are here. I've followed people from one camp to the next camp, to the Benchlands, to this camp. They're my people. I never propose to speak for them, but I know intimately what they'd benefit from. There are many times more people sleeping outside all over town. Where's the advocacy for them? We need an array of shelter options that I've been advocating for over many years. It is you and others who are missing the boat. Cheers. I'm happy for this post thread to end. A lot of important contrasting ideas were exchanged in that dialogue. I, of course, tend to agree with Reggie Meisler rather than with Brent Adams, but there's numerous things Brent has said that I can't disagree with. And, well, we've talked about this on the air as well. But I'm in the war, so to speak, on the side of Ross Camp. And not because I think Ross Camp is the best alternative under these circumstances, not at all. But it is the alternative where people are leaving, living, and it has created services where there are none before. Porta potties, wash stations, harm reduction needle services, community involvement in supporting homeless people that was not present before. These are all things that I don't think Brent recognizes, that his organizing efforts, while important and good, and hopefully ultimately successful in creating transitional encampments, doesn't have actually the same impact as a bunch of homeless people coming together and staying in one place. I mean, that's something that just has to be dealt with. Let's take a musical break.
Every great war produces its great hit songs. And after the war is over, We like to gather around the piano and sing these songs. We enjoy singing the songs because they remind us of how much we enjoyed the war. Now, World War III, of course, is almost upon us, as you know, by popular demand. And it occurred to me that if any songs are going to come out of World War III, we better start writing them now. So I have one here. This is a song that some of the boys might have sung to their mothers as they might have gone bravely off to World War III. Oh, I should explain. In this song, there's a reference to our two leading television commentators, Chet Huntley and David Brinkley. I thought this was particularly appropriate since, of course, as you know, World War III will be the first war to be on television. First World War, anyway. I certainly hope we all have color television by then. So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But while you swelter down there in your shelter, you can see me on your TV. While we're attacking frontally, watch Brinkley and Huntley describing contrapuntally the cities we have lost. No need for you to miss a minute of the agonizing Holocaust. Yeah! Little Johnny Jones, he was a U.S. pilot, and no shrinking violet, who was he? He was mighty proud when World War III was declared. He wasn't scared, no siree. And this is what he said on his way to Armageddon. So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But though I may roam, I'll come back to my home, although it may be a pile of debris. Remember, Mommy, I'm off to get a commie, so send me a salami and try to smile somehow. I'll look for you when the war is over, an hour and a half from now.
And that was Tom Lehrer from his Copenhagen performance back in the early 60s. I guess the mid-60s, actually. I actually saw him once, heard him play overseas. A little stiff, but I love his songs. And, of course, he's a Santa Cruz local. I've never seen him around here, but I believe he was a math professor up at UCSC until, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago. And I even heard he'd composed some new songs, which I was desperate to get my hands on, but never did. So they still do his musical, Tomfoolery, which essentially has the songs from the 50s and 60s that he wrote. I think he later said that the reality had outdone itself, had outdone itself so much in terms of satirizing itself that it became impossible to make fun of it because it was utterly absurd itself in terms of the kinds of, the military expenditures, for example, have gone up by 1,000% since the 60s at least. And now the nuclear arms race is escalating again. It's it would be sobering if we actually took a look at it. I don't think I ever look at it much, but occasionally I pretend that I'm looking at it, and it kind of sobers me up for a few minutes. I don't really spend much time reading Facebook, but I did find that long dialogue between Brent Adams and Reggie Meisler on Facebook, which I thought was not only worth reading, but was worth reading aloud. Here's a little something between, Satya Orion, Sylvia Karras, and Annie McAuliffe. I learned yesterday that the county of Santa Cruz, Satya writes, is threatening to withhold major funding allocated for the homeless if the Ross camp is not closed. This was the Tuesday Board of Supervisors meeting. I heard this too apocryphally, I heard it second or third or fourth hand, and it's not too clear when I went to look for the information on the agenda or on the summary of what the Board of Supervisors had done. I found that they had passed funding for the, as I've mentioned before in the broadcast, for the to assist the city in funding the 1220 River Street at an outrageously expensive level, as well as the Association of Faith Communities' restrictive and limited shelter program, which in no way would make up for closing the Ross Camp in terms of providing for the people there. But there was no mention of a closing of the Ross Camp, which was what we, some of us were told at the Conscience in Action and Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meetings that we hold kind of back-to-back on Wednesday, starting at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. Come on down, sip coffee with us, and chatter with us. So it's not clear that's the case, but here's some discussion of it. Satya apparently feels that it was happening, that there is this threat to close the Ross Camp, that then is likely to go back to City Council and get them to reverse their keep the Ross Camp open until you have space for folks. And some would say, no, they can't do that. The Boise versus Martin decision doesn't allow it. They're under a lawsuit. Let's not be alarmist. But often city police and the city manager do what they want to do, and they don't really pay too much attention to either what the community or the city council says. And that's unfortunately been the case for a long time, both in this city and others. Satya does, I'm grateful to all the wonderful activists in our town and for the honesty and courage of the city council member who shared this information with the public. So apparently she got it from a city council member. Sylvia Karras, who's an activist on the patient rights end of things, who I've sometimes disagreed with and sometimes been in unity with, writes, I listened to some of this morning's Board of Supervisors meeting and didn't hear anything about withholding funding. I did hear that until the city is ready to open 1220, the River Street campground, the boneyard, the county will hold the money, and if it isn't all spent per the contract and amendments, the county will retain the balance. Sonia, what did you hear and from where? This is the HEAP and KESH money that the county manages. There's another witness who said she heard something about withholding money. Sylvia, who's pretty, I've had the impression she's a pretty careful observer. All the way back during the Occupy movement of 2011, she kept a close watch on the Board of Supervisors and the City Council, particularly the Board of Supervisors that I usually spend little time at. They meet every Tuesday morning from 9 through the afternoon, as the City Council tends to meet through the afternoon in the evening, into the evening on Tuesdays. Annie McAuliffe, who I don't know, writes, members of the City Council are actually real-time friends with several Board of Supervisor members. This is a ploy, a publicity stunt to try to redirect attention from an already filed lawsuit in regards to Martin versus Boise. Both city and county government cannot override state and federal mandates. If the county withholds the money for any reason, it can be taken back by the state. If the city does not provide some actual shelter that actually provides a place for the people to actually go, they cannot simply close any encampment, or there will be multiple lawsuits against the city, and they cannot afford that at all. The real issue here is that we have working programs actually assisting real human beings at the camp and the much larger amount of people not even in the camp at Ross. Both the city and the county are playing politics, political and personal BS games, and want that money for their own projects, which are unproven and unsubstantiated. 200 people are associated with the camp, and that in no way is in no way a representation of the total number of actual homeless in the city or county. I live and work downtown, and I see all of this 24/7. Spending any of that grant money on a current shelter system is ignorant and will potentially help, quote-unquote, about 60 people. And those will have to be people who can qualify with all the ridiculous quid pro quos. These are human beings, and we need to work with them and those already providing in situ services, services that already exist. We don't have time for some down-the-road building project either. We need to work toward low-barrier solutions alongside complete and massive rental property reform and fixing wage stagnation in this county. I live in what is called an... Let's read this. think it's LIR, low income resident. The current rent for a 100 square foot studio with no kitchen, just a sink, small beer fridge and microwave is currently going at $1,450. How in the actual fuck is that low income? We need to fix our society at every level. I am one lost paycheck away from being homeless, like thousands of other real humans across this county. Those housed individuals who continue to call this crisis we have a homeless problem are blind, privileged, affluent, and the real problem. And continuing to rely on City Council and the County Board of Supervisors to do what is necessary and correct is a lot like shooting heroin to get rid of depression. Sure, it works, but it works by killing you. This is exactly why we now have Martin versus Boise. We keep putting faith in people who basically win popularity contests, and their popularity comes from what other rich people they know. Rich people have no idea what they're doing except for what benefits them. Money is a tool, and it's being used as a hammer to beat anyone who is not rich, and a ladder for those who are. We need to have open dialogue and involve the very people who are homeless in every conversation. They are not housed, not stupid. They are not little kids who don't have the ability to understand or communicate. These are human beings, and we need to start referring to them in a more humane and respectful way. They are part of our community, and members of our local governing bodies need to make peace with that. Money or no money, human relations must be done with care and complete consideration. Sitting on some board or council at some meeting with others complicit in the social ills that cause homelessness in the first place is not doing that. We need to get everyone involved and tell the elected ones that work for us, all of us. That means they are our employees and we need to tell them what to do. They clearly need our directions. Abby Samuels then writes in response to Sylvia Karras, the 2x2 committee consists of Watkins and Cummings from the City Council and Coonerty and McPherson from the Board of Supervisors. They will not give the city funds if the city doesn't close the camp. These funds are separate from the funds you may be thinking of, Sylvia, and they probably wouldn't mention it in public meetings yet. These funds are for the expensive River Street camp that is only intended to operate for 2 months. Watch for the agenda to come out on Thursday, that's today, but I am hearing that Justin, who we thought to be a progressive, has now become friends with Coonerty and is most likely to put on the agenda to close the camp. That's on the upcoming Tuesday council meeting. That's Abby Samuels. Karras replies to Abby, yes, but the camp can't be closed. Threats of lawsuits, Condotti keeps cautioning. See the just adopted standard operating procedures. 1220 River funds agreed to yesterday by supervisors. 1220 expected to open at the end of April. Census of Gateway for accurate count upcoming. I think there'll be a lot of hand-wringing and threatening, but unless there are options, the camp can't be closed. Abby writes, they can do whatever they want, as they have done for decades. I guess we'll find out on Tuesday. Olive concludes, speaking to Alicia Cool, this is not your fault, but you're being used as a pawn. Just be clear and forthright in all that you do. Stop arguing with Brent, keep pushing for the rights, and keep doing your best to help people. I know you are working hard to do what you feel in your heart, and I support you. The City Council and Board of Supervisors have personal friendships and using their connections to cause bullshit and redirect attention away from the real issues. Rich people making the issue about money instead of about humanity. And this issue is about human beings. We need to fix the societal crap that is causing and contributing to homelessness. We need to make sure that everyone housed sees those in and out of the camp as legitimate human beings who have a right to a safe place to live. If the housed have a right to something, so does everyone else. She continues, I just want you to be successful and be able to make things better at the camp. We can't fix this overnight, but damn it, I believe in you and I believe in every person on the street. It makes no difference if some is using or committed a crime or is just simply poor. Every person has a story and matters. I think those pictures you took of people are fantastic, and I would love to see an op-ed in the local news about them. I hope you're getting rest, and please know that I truly understand your points of view. And the other day I was up in Berkeley and picked up a few interviews there. I'm going to play some of those now. Because the situation up there, apparently after a hiatus for at least the first that came for the homeless here there camp, as it's called, it's gotten worse. You're not going to hear that from this interview because the day after I left, the city announced it was coming in to insist everyone take their tents down during the day and start following this series of rules passed by the so-called liberal city council, which are being used, I think, to force tents down all over the city. When I was up there, I saw tents on one street corner after another, as well as the 20 or 30 tents at the first they came for the homeless encampment on Adelaide Street at the edge of Berkeley. To find this first they came for the homeless update, which actually happened after this interview that I'm also going to be playing you. So police officers and a Berkeley City employee handing a warning or citation to a camper.
Can you say that again? We can fit
9 square feet.
9 square feet. So one of these squares is where we have to fit all of our gear. Is that including our personal? Is that including us too?
No, just your.
So we get another separate 3 feet for us.
There's no limit on persons. This is just about objects.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. When you reduce your house to the size of a 3 foot square, I'll reduce my house to the size of a 3 foot square.
The other thing that's changing is we're asking folks to take their tents down.
D. Scott, 23. A. McDougall, 77. J. Jones, 160.
These are the police officers' names, badges.
The next week, so this is just the education piece. We're coming out because I know it's a big change. We want to give people a chance to start adjusting. Next week, we're going to come back out again, and that's when the enforcement is going to start. So we're going to ask folks to start working on it now, and then next week, we'll have a public workshop with us. If there's things you want to get rid of, or you have any trash that you can use, we can put that in the trash.
That's pretty cool.
And help you reduce the size. That's helpful, and then that's when
enforcement. You mean illegal enforcement. It's illegal to enforce what you're enforcing. Okay. And I'm sorry, I didn't get your name?
Bree.
Bree? And you're with the city manager's office. And you are?
Kristen
with the city manager's office as well. Okay, well, your ordinances are in violation of the Constitution. And
we're not
Again, your request is unconstitutional, and I will charge you all with Title 18 U.S.C. 242, which is under the color of law. A citizen like myself under Title 8 U.S.C. 1401 can charge you with and place you in prison for a minimum of 1 year and up to life, depending on the severity of your crime. Do you understand that?
Any other questions?
Do you all understand what I just told you?
No,
it's we the people, not we the city council. Okay? Is there a reason why you put your gloves on, officer? Are you expecting something?
I put my hands. You get like little dicks.
Yeah. Me too.
Being up there.
Well, thanks for stopping by and telling us your illegal laws, ordinances. They are not valid. And the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on that any law that is not concurrent with the Constitution and Bill of Rights upon its inception is invalid. You can vote on it, put it in print, and make an ordinance and all that, but it's still not valid.
I suspect that was actually at an encampment up the way, one of the many dozens of encampments all around Berkeley now, because people are providing their own shelter and their own tents on the sidewalk. Here's the actual first they came for the homeless here, their encampment, which I approached a couple of days ago. Many attended the first they came for the homeless here, their encampment. I've been handed a flyer, vehicular residents meet and greet barbecue. Sponsored by the Berkeley Friends on Wheels, People's Park Committee, and Bay Area Landless People's Alliance. That's going to be April 21st at noon, Sunday, People's Park, 2556 Hay Street, Berkeley, 94704, right above Telegraph, in case you don't know where that is. And it reads, we invite you to join us at People's Park for a friendly family barbecue to meet our vehicular neighbors living in the Bay Area. Vehicular residents are friends, students, gig economy workers, artists, families, vets, elderly and disabled people coming together to park on city streets. Currently, vehicular residents face harsher restrictions impacting our survival in the Bay Area. In Berkeley, an overnight parking ban on recreational vehicles from 2 to 5 was passed on March 26th. Despite the challenges we face, we want to celebrate our community on wheels and offer our neighbors a safe place for free speech and support, solidarity, friendship, and love.
The barbecue will be followed by the Julia Vinograd Memorial Poetry Reading and Bubble Blowing at 3 p.m. Berkeley welcomes all people. Come out and join our network, a directory of neighbors, family, friends, comrades. Bring park games, a poem, your vehicular home, and your friends. If you have the means of sharing food, we welcome everything. 50th year of the People's Park celebration. The sand painter, sign in.
Well,
your name, sir?
My name is Robin Silver, and you know, we're just trying to move forward with getting sanctioning by the city. There was a recent article in the Street Spirit magazine, an interview with Mayor Jesse Peregrin.
The pretender.
Yeah. I mean, some people call him that, but there was one upbeat part of it that was of particular interest to this camp. The interviewer did not bring this topic up, but out of the blue, the mayor brought up the idea of camp sanctioning, and he mentioned this camp, the Here There Community Camp, by name as a model encampment that would be, you know, worthy of sanctioning.
But sanctioning, meaning the positive, not the negative sanctioning.
Yes, of not being under the threat of being a sand painting anymore to bring it back around, you know, not being on notice of it being permitted by the city, you know, to have utilities, our toilet, you know, our garbage, that sort of thing. So not at this particular site. Let me clarify that. He wasn't sanctioning this particular location or mentioning that that should be done. He was mentioning that the behavior, you know, the ethics of this camp, that's alcohol and camp that would be worthy of sanctioning.
Right.
And that was optimistic. Let's hope that that is not just lip service and that has some action behind it. So,
how long ago did this article show up?
Excuse me?
How long ago did the article show up?
We're in mid-month. It showed up at the beginning of this month, the beginning of the, where are we at? We're in May now? What are we at?
April.
April, okay.
April 15th was yesterday.
Yeah, oh yeah, tax day.
So you're optimistic about this.
That article in the April issue of Street Spirit magazine, and
which you can find online, I believe, or you used to be able to find it.
Yeah, I believe you can find it online.
Unfortunately, as I said, the next day, police and that same community homeless worker, and there were two of them actually, two women, came to the first they came for the homeless camp and told them that within a week they'd be enforcing the laws that would require them to keep their take their tents down at night, or during the day, rather, which meant, according to the people at the camp, that they would have to, they were essentially being told they would be evicted. And that was how the campers interpreted it.
And so,
you're optimistic about this?
Cautiously. Cautiously. What is gratifying is that we were named specifically for our conscientiousness of keeping the camp clean, working with the local community as best we can, and, you know, for our policies, not creating a disturbance, keeping...
And again, this is the same kind of approach that Brent Adams recommends using. It doesn't sound like a bad approach in Santa Cruz to promote government friendliness toward and approval of and acceptance of transitional encampments. But the problem is that's not really the reason transitional encampments are off the table. They're off the table because providing that kind of legitimacy is the first step towards legitimizing poor people. And that is exactly what folks who are in a superior financial position don't really want to do. Because in a way it delegitimizes their position insofar as a lot of people are kept poor because a few key people are kept very rich. Or such is my belief.
Being, you know, a good tidy look here and that is what got us noticed by the mayor. So
plus the fact that you've survived, what, 16 or 17 police raids?
Yeah, and, you know, we've been here for a little over 2 years now. We're the longest-standing camp in the Bay Area, as far as I know.
And they didn't survive because they were so nice and they were such a sweet camp. They survived because they were willing to return again and again after police kept taking their property, breaking up the situation, arresting them, citing them, stealing their property, and not returning it, trashing their property. And the real question is, what's going to happen at the Ross camp if the same thing is attempted there? I guess we're going to find out. We may find out sooner than we think if this there actually is a plan to move on the camp within the next few days or the next few weeks.
And it's for those specific reasons. So we're just encouraged to do more of that. If, you know, the mayor's noticing it, you know, the judge has come by here and he's noticed that too. So, you know, the more we do that, the more the community notices, and that in itself is more than any of the words I can say right now.
Has the camp grown much in the last couple months?
No, we're limited by our size here and by an agreement that we don't get over like 22 people here, because that's about all we can tolerate in this location.
What do you do with folks who want to, who are suitable people, they can't come here, they go other places?
That really hasn't arisen. We have a turnover here. There's kind of a core group that turns over slower than, you know, the people who come in and out and use it as a quick transitory place to kind of get their shit together and then move on. So there's kind of an open door of a few tents, you know, on any given day. So we've never really reached that situation where we've had to turn people away, other for the fact where they did not want to agree with the rules of the camp of being drug and alcohol free. So, and you know, Stacy?
Kind of, I think. From okay. And well, we've been talking with
Robin Silver.
Thanks, Robin. Any final words?
Yeah, keep your hearts open, your eyes open.
And your mouth shut. Your mouth open too sometimes.
Yeah, when you need to.
Right on. Thank you, man. Across the street, or just a pavilion of merchants?
That they're selling produce.
It's a farmer, a market of some kind.
Yep, on Tuesday.
And now we're talking with
Stacy.
And Stacy, what kind of a report have you got for me that would enlighten our Santa Cruz audience?
Oh man.
We have Ross Camp down there, which is not drug-free, not alcohol-free, but has been going for 6 months and is being protected by the Boise versus Martin decision and has recently sued the city to stop them from eliminating them.
Nice. That's what I was really curious about, is how it's going down there.
Dig it.
We're kind of in a flux. Berkeley has passed a municipal ordinance that technically is written for us. And
you're not talking about the RV ban?
No. This is a ban against consuming more than 3 by 3 square feet.
Oh, that thing.
Right.
And have they actually tried to use it against you?
Not us. Apparently they have actually tried to, or in fact they've actually used it against some of the kids downtown.
And again, as you heard, well, perhaps you didn't hear about what, I wasn't quite able to find the Facebook presentation of first they came for the homeless people, and Stacy himself, the man you're hearing talking now, angrily denouncing them for moving on the first they came for the homeless camp the very next day.
Which, yeah, right. You know, this is technically what they said they passed it for, but the wording in the actual ordinance specifically stated tents between the sidewalk and the street. If you can look here, you can see we are tents between the sidewalk and the street.
So you are, in fact,
what they were talking about.
But for some reason they've not enforced it. Is it because you've been paying off large bribes?
No comment.
No comment. Interesting. And I see a lot of tents around town.
We're a homeless camp. How large can those bribes be?
Well, it
could
be
with desperate politicians. I mean, no comment.
The BART train continues its regular sort of greetings as they pass by here. You are by the BART tracks. For those who are interested in visiting the camp, it is at, what, Adeline, and what's the cross street?
3332 Adeline Street.
Okay, and that's...
That's the outhouse.
And there's an outhouse down the way. You can perhaps...
The outhouse has an address, and that's the outhouse's address.
But is the outhouse adequate to deal with the camp population?
No.
And so do you end up digging a hole in the center median, or how do you...
That's something we're considering recently, as they've cut off the service.
Really? When did they do that?
When they thought the court case was going to be over.
And when was that?
How long has that been? About 2 or 3 weeks now?
Yeah, I mean, like, we've been getting, like, intermittent, like a weird irregular service since then.
Well, apparently, like, the guy was kind of trying to be good because he likes us. So he got caught when he wasn't supposed to be cleaning it, and so he can't do it anymore because he already got in trouble.
Charming. This is one porta potty for 22 people.
Right.
I mean, at the Ross camp, we have about 100 to 200 people in there, 8 porta potties, 4 washing stations, which the city had to put in because it would have been, you know, a public health disaster if they hadn't. Even though the same population was all around town, and when they were invisible, they ignored them, and the facilities were all, with a very few exceptions, closed at night.
Well, it made the whole thing much more sanitary, and this was something that went down in Portland a long time ago. I don't know if you've been there.
Camp Dignity?
They have the Portland Moves.
Tell me about that.
They have actual bathrooms in Portland.
You mean brick-and-mortar structures?
They're like steel, round things.
Half-assed brick-and-mortar.
Sort of styled after San Francisco, but these are real. They got porcelain toilets with a real handle that flushes and a roll of toilet paper there.
A real roll of toilet paper.
A real roll.
They're getting kind of fancy, don't you think?
Yeah, they even got, like, plastic butt gaskets and all that shit, you know? So...
Next thing, attendants with towels.
Well, no, they didn't go that far. No. But you can actually use the bathroom there.
Well, that's getting carried a little too far.
Yeah, I mean, even if people, like, shit all over it, they got a guy that comes in with a hose and it goes underneath the thing and they got a drain, so they clean it.
Into Portland recently?
Oh, yeah.
And I understand that... I knew there was a sort of a small, sort of first they came for the homeless style camp, Dignity Village, which really had very little to do with the rest of the homeless in Portland because they got their own little piece of the land. And
yeah, Dignity Village is all the way back to the 1990s.
Right.
Since then you have R2-D2, and then you have Hazelnut Grove.
And tell me about those two.
Well, Hazelnut Grove was connected to the Portland Occupied.
Okay.
Just like this camp is.
This came from the Occupy San Francisco.
Right.
Poverty tour. Right.
That's exactly right.
And I know Right to Dream. What was the...
Well, it's funny because that came Portland. At the same time as the Occupied in Portland, but it wasn't actually part of the Occupied.
Are they still existing?
They're still... That camp got moved from its original location, but it's still in Portland. That's still going.
Is that drug-free or... drug tolerant, or what is it?
Well, they're not P-testing anybody, but yeah, they make sure that people come there actually want to sleep.
Right. So if you do your drugs, you do them privately and you don't cause trouble?
You do them before you get there or after you leave.
I see. Okay. Now, most of the camps in the Oakland, Santa Cruz, Berkeley area are actually mixtures of folks who are drug users, non-drug users, escaping family abuse situations, economic refugees. Do you have much connection with those other groups?
We do. And that's gone up and down and through all kinds of changes, as you might well imagine, over the 2 years. And we've had a lot of people come through here with problems. And it comes right down to what we're doing excludes us from having the time to be able to help people like that directly in this camp. So we try to help people move on to something better instead of just leave them on the street, no matter what. But yeah, this camp is a drug and alcohol free camp.
How long you been with it?
I've been on this spot 2.5 years now.
And any changes in how other camps are treated by the city, both Berkeley and Oakland?
There's been a lot of changes.
Anything you want to comment on?
the most important is that it seems, though, people have come to a much clearer understanding of the importance of hygiene.